You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
I want to apologize to all the women I have called pretty. Before I've called them intelligent or brave. I'm sorry I made it sound as though something as simple as what you are born with is the most you have to be proud of when your spirit has crushed mountains. From now on, I will say things like, you are resilient or you are extraordinary. Not because I don't think you're pretty, but because you are so much more than that. That is a poem by Canadian poet Rupi Kaur. Today joining me for a frank conversation on body is my extraordinary friend, Christine Henk. Welcome, Christine, to Sleep in Society podcast, and welcome to this particular episode on body ownership.
Hi, Ruhi. That was a really nice poem.
Isn't that extraordinary?
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. She is one of my favorite spoken word artists and poets. Most of her focus is around body positivity. And yeah, she's quite extraordinary. I strongly recommend that if anybody gets a chance to actually listen to her speak to, she's quite extraordinary and very powerful. And every time, actually, I can't believe that I read that without crying, because every time I listen to this, it does induce an emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How, this is a tough topic.
There's a lot of ways to discuss it, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we've been kind of looking into this for, as you and I do have these long conversations when we decide on a topic and we go into, we delve deep into them. And I found this actually, the more we started exploring it, I thought this is a tough topic because it's so personal. So how are you with your body these days?
I am quite good with my body these days. This is more of a recent revelation that I've had, and I think with all the time off from work and spending a lot of time with my kids, I've been able to think a bit more about things. And what I've come to the conclusion is that what I feed my body, how I dress it, who I embrace with it or allow to embrace me, they're all 100% my decision. And it's odd that at 41, I finally realized that. But I think that that's the big thing that has come recently for me, is that this is mine, it's only mine. And it's my decision what I do with it and how I present it. So that's where I am right now. And I think it's very healthy, but it's only been a very recent thing that I came to that conclusion.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. That's fantastic. Congratulations. What a powerful thing to be able to actually say and admit to that and acknowledge that your body is your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my body is mine to decide with what I want to do with it, how I want to dress it, who has the right to those spaces. And I think as women, it takes a long time to get to that particular journey, especially maybe our generation did. I'm not quite sure as to where the current generation is with their body ownership.
Mm-hmm.
That's a conversation I would love to have with some teens.
Mm-hmm. Yourself?
With me, I think it was within the last decade or so, my views on my body shifted quite dramatically. Like, I always kind of was weirdly possessive about myself, my own body and my own sense of independence. A lot of it has to do with culture, which we'll go into in a bit. But I think it a lot shifted because of my awareness of my physical self. And more so because as I started to train during my case study, I started to train with a different purpose. The purpose was more in terms of like being, wanting to be strong and wanting to be powerful. So I could kind of, I myself could become more flexible to all of the inflexible structures that were around me. And that totally shaped how I looked at myself. And it was also looking at myself from my own eyes and not through somebody else's. Because I think for the longest time, part of that issue is that you're looking at yourself through eyes of others, whether it's society or whether the magazine's telling you how you need to be looking at, what the idea of the current beauty standard is, of all the loves you meet. Like, all of those things shape your perception of your body. So you're kind of looking at yourself from these other people's lens and not your own. And I think that was one of the most phenomenal discoveries, was to be able to look at my body through my own lens. And it was more about being resilience and building resilience and being physically and mentally strong. So the body itself took on a different form. I started to inhabit it instead of it inhabiting me. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. So it's more like your body is just kind of the vehicle for you to do all the other things you want to do, instead of the outside world just looking at you and perceiving your beauty or your health or anything by what you physically look at.
Mm-hmm.
Where your body is just the way you
move
give
in
to
the world
what you want the world to see or hear from you.
Yeah.
Instead of just the pretty, like your poem said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone could see pretty.
Yeah, exactly. It's so much more. Mm-hmm. You're so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the longest time, I think, especially for women, and even in the history of humanity, that was something that they had to use because women didn't have that much power within the political or social realms. Beauty was one way to be powerful or to be heard in, mm-hmm. you know, because it was such a, for such a long time, and in some countries this is still the case, where it's such a patriarchal society. And so, yeah, coming to that understanding of one's body and its capacities and its capabilities is one of the most interesting shifts, actually, for me. And
right.
And that happened because I was initiating this case study, and you become very aware of everything around you, how people see you, you know, because you would get comments like, oh, so you're training this hard, your body must be so fit. Like, I didn't even understand what that meant. Like, what does that mean? Like, your body must be fit. Obviously, if you are training, if you're doing physical high intensity training, of course your body is going to be physically fit. But the way those statements were being made were, you know, as if like you're trying to undress the person,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it takes a different form. And so when my child became a teen, I wanted for them to have a realization of what bodies meant. And I introduced CrossFit for one particular reason, was because this is where it was about the power and the capacity and the capabilities of bodies, regardless of gender.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to see how powerful women can be in terms of their physicality and the strength it takes for them to get to that particular point. And it's like so apparent. It was so apparent to me when I walked into this particular CrossFit gym, where that was so much the key, how you perceive the body to be a powerful, strong vehicle. And I think that was such an important component to acknowledge.
Okay, so you mentioned culture before. How did your cultural upbringing in your adolescent years and then through your adulthood shape how you felt about your body and
so,
your ownership?
Yeah, so I'm coming from India. I was there up until the age of 14. So my early adolescence was in India, and then I arrived here on my own at the age of 15. So India, this is really important that I bring this out, has the highest female feticide incidence in the world. In 2011, the number that came out is around 75.84 million incidents of aborting if the gender was deemed to be female. So much so that in 1994, that there was it was made illegal to know the sex of the baby when you got pregnant.
Oh my.
And so sex selective abortions were deemed illegal, and that was further amended in 2003. And this is like recent, right? And mm-hmm. This is not even like 2 decades ago. And this is a country where it's very patriarchal, it's very paternalistic. It's the dowry system in India that made daughters an unaffordable economic burden. Childhood neglect of girls. It's unbelievable. So you are in a country, in a culture, where birth of boys is celebrated, and birth of a girl is deemed to be an occasion of great sorrow, almost akin to death in the family.
I don't understand that. I mean, I don't understand that just quite simply, but in the if your culture is going to survive, you need women.
Yes.
How do you justify that?
You don't. You can't. You can't justify, because the whole system needs to change. I think that's already changing now, because women are being educated. Women are being independent. So when I was growing up, this is like in the early 80s, you have a prime minister that's a female prime minister. Indira Gandhi was a prime minister, but was there any progressive laws regarding females? No. It was just that I was exceptionally fortunate to have the parents that I did, who were egalitarian, who believed in educating us, really educating us, and who really pushed us towards independence, because they didn't believe in these ideas of women are chattel, that they didn't believe that a female is first owned by her father, and then that is transferred over to the husband and husband's family. Because for the longest time, this is the viewpoint of that culture, and I'm sure it still is in some parts of that country. So how do you actually come to terms with something like that, where your family, like my father, my parents are very adamant about, showing us that we are more than equal, that we need to be independent, that marriage is not something that we should be striving for, that there's much more to us than just that. And then you step outside of your house and the entire culture is
telling
against
you the opposite?
Yeah, against that idea. So there's this dissonance that exists. And I remember very specifically at one incident where my father... I was talking to some of my cousins, and my cousins, they were quite a bit older, male cousins, and they were like, when you're talking to us, you must lower your eyes. And I remember my father intervening and saying to me, looking at me, and he said, when you're talking to anybody, you should always meet their eyes, regardless of their gender, regardless of their age. And that kind of left a permanent imprint on my brain, because it was like, you know, it was incredible. And so how do you feel about your body, right? Growing up in that particular kind of culture. Mm-hmm. Where are you if you think you are just a property of? How could you possibly feel empowered? You grew up in New York.
New York, yes.
How was it for you? Like, what was that like?
I would say that the cultural aspect, obviously you come from a culture that's far different from what you're living in now and from what I grew up in. I grew up in the mid-90s, I would say. Those are my teenage years. And it was the time of supermodels, as we discussed earlier. And it was like, you know what I look like. I do not look like a supermodel. I never have. Like, I'm short.
But you're exceptionally beautiful.
Well, yes. Thank you. But that's not all I am.
No. Inside out. You're extraordinary, brave, courageous. I can go on and on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Just bring that poem back.
Yes.
So I would say the culture outside that was being brought in, like being, you know, seeing these runway models and the Victoria's Secret fashion shows were big back then. And so having that outside, all those pictures coming at you, it makes you a little bit insecure when you don't look anything like that. And obviously not many people do. There are only a handful of women that actually look like that. But I would say my culture, I don't think it... The family that I grew up in and what was immediately surrounding me was very supportive and very kind of like dismissive of the supermodel thing. Like, don't look at that. That's not normal. There are beautiful women, but that's not
realistic.
What people are like. Mm-hmm. So I would say that my culture was supportive, but there was still the idea that you want to be attractive, mm-hmm. and that's how you're going to get someone to love you, and that's how you're going to go through the remainder of the steps that are expected for you in your life. And the steps meaning nothing like dramatic and crazy, but fall in love, get married, have children, live happily ever after. So when I found someone that I thought I was going to do all of those things with, I just fell into kind of making sure it was important that he looked at me and my body in a way that was always pleasing for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess like it's still a patriarchal society. Like I don't think you can get out of that anywhere. I don't think there's anywhere that you're going to see where women are equal to men. It's more of an individual choice whether you're going to allow that to influence the way you go through your decisions and go through your life, or you're just going to be like, this is not all that I am. Look at all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So, yeah. It's interesting, like you talk about like supermodels and the 90s culture, which is what I kind of walked into when I came to Canada, mm-hmm. was at the height of supermodel. And I didn't quite understand it because actually I didn't have access to magazines at that point.
Okay.
It was later that I was looking at these body types and these bodies and these incredibly beautiful women and how beauty is defined. And then later on, I realized that when you go to the grocery checkout and there's a whole selection of magazines that is telling you how to get your abs, how to get your body in shape for summer, how to be bikini worthy or swimsuit worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at these images of these models. And now we've come to this realization because now it's it's become very transparent as to what they're doing with it, right? They're photoshopping.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even realistic representations of people that are on there in the first place because they're photoshopped. So these are unrealistic standards to be holding up to in the first place. Mm-hmm. So what I found was very funny was that you have these magazines depicting what a fantastic body type is supposed to be, your ideal body type or body image. And then right next to it is like a whole bunch of chocolate bars and chips. Like, so you're looking at these things and you're going, oh, I'm never going to achieve that. And you start feeling really terrible about like your own sense of self. And I've seen this happen. Like I've watched this because as soon as I became aware of that correlation, I started watching like how people interacted, like when they're looking at magazines and how many actually went straight for the chocolate bar.
That's so interesting.
Right? Like, because you have this, and one of them was open enough to talk to me about this. Because I said, oh, were you wanting the chocolate bar? She's like, no, I just automatically went for it. You automatically went for it because you're looking at these unachievable body types, realizing that's never going to happen. And mm-hmm. then you're feeling so crappy about it that you reach out for one thing that's going to make you feel good for that time. For mm-hmm. that moment, which is, you know, sugar rush, chocolate, dopamine.
Very interesting observation.
It's like
that I'm going to pay more attention to that from now on.
It would be very interesting to see how,
funny.
It is. And then absolutely. And it's so this idea of something that's so unrealistic. I don't know why I think that's something that should be illegal, personally. Like, you can't put body types that are not achievable and are not healthy.
Right. Well, healthy is a big...
Yeah. They're not healthy portrayals, mm-hmm. like, and accepting your body type and then making sure it's healthy. Like, making sure you're exercising, making sure you're eating well.
Right.
Those are things that we should be perpetuating in a society. Talk about preventive medicine. You know, mm-hmm. that's where we need to be. How... I wanted to talk about, like, you know, we've touched upon this subject before in our very first conversation about motherhood, mm-hmm. because that's something we don't talk about, the what happens to our bodies. That's not something that's ever raised prior to, oh, there's going to be a shift in your body after you give birth,
mm-hmm.
and that it's going to take a while for you to come back to whatever you consider your normal. How did... motherhood change your perception of your body?
Well, I would say that my experience giving birth probably changed it the most suddenly and dramatically.
Yeah.
in a given moment. Because like I said, I've never been the supermodel type. Slim, fine, but it wasn't ever one to show off anything. Still not. But when you're giving birth and all of your inhibitions are totally out the window because there's a person about to come out of your body and live on its own, you kind of have to say, oh, my body's not like a statue anymore. It's not something to just be looked at. It's something functional. And it's functional for me and for the people that I'm bringing into this world. And so I started to look at myself more as the body being a functional tool instead of just something to look at. So grew people inside there, fed them from my body. So that changed it too. And then I recently, and I mean recently as in like in the last couple of weeks, have decided that, okay, my kids are old enough, they're 6 and almost 11, where they need to understand my body is now mine again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like to cuddle and they like to tug and they like to be affectionate and touchy. And I love all of that. I'm not going to give away any of the affection that I get from my kids and that I give to my kids. But I've recently found that I've had enough of them just pulling and tugging and real and thinking that whatever they want from me at any given moment, they could just grab and take it. So I've started quite recently just telling them to stop grabbing at me. Like, this is my, body. Settle down. I don't grab at you. If you want a hug, come give me a hug. I'll never say no to that. But if you need me to, you know, help you pick out your clothes, you don't have to grab on the back of my shirt and pull me. You can ask, like, because this is my body. And being as how they're both girls, I think that that's, I'm trying not to sound cold by telling them this, but I also want them to know that I don't grab your body and pull on it, and nobody should do that. So please don't do it to me. Like, you have to respect that, so that you realize that people have to respect that from you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
and
respect.
Learn that kind of early, that don't be grabbing each other, and don't they fight together and they hit and whatever. And it drives me nuts that as a mother, I don't want to ever see either of them hurt, but I have to kind of show them that this is, you know, the things that are on me are mine. The mm-hmm. things that are on you are yours, and those ones are yours. And, you know, respect that and respect it of other people. So I think that's the biggest thing that motherhood did, was make me realize this is mine. And, you know, you can have it for a little bit because you're growing and you need it. Mm-hmm. But now you don't need it. So let's, you know, that's you, that's you, that's me. And learn that and respect it and make other people respect it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty amazing. Like, for the while you're nursing, you know, after my child was born and I was nursing there for quite a while, and at one point I decided I just can't do this anymore mm-hmm. because I wanted to have something of myself back, or wanting to retain or come back to myself in whatever capacity. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling that I'd given enough at that point. Like, it wasn't like I'd given more than what was recommended. And I was totally okay with that for a while. But also, when you're nursing, you have to be so careful about, like, what you're eating and the nutrition that you are giving to yourself, because in turn you are giving that nutrition to your child. All of those things, that takes its toll after a certain time, because, you know, eating only specific foods and such, and very, very good diet and all of that. And then on top mm-hmm. of that, you're nursing and looking after this whole entity. And I remember when I decided at the point where I was no longer going to do that. But there was this phenomenal sense of guilt that came with it, as if I was being very selfish. Although, mm-hmm. as I said, I had given more than what was recommended.
Right.
But still, it was very interesting that it took a little while to let go and say, it's okay, it's your body. You're okay with right. this. Like, you need to come back to it. You need to start owning it, but it's quite the process, I have to say.
Yeah, and it's funny how we consider that selfish when fathers and men don't have that expectation on them at all. They don't have to give of their bodies in the way that women do. Mm-hmm. But we still consider, oh, was that enough? Was that enough?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You grow a human inside you. That was enough just right there. But we keep going because that's what's best for the child. And how is that ever selfish to reclaim ourselves?
Yeah, because I think like the pressures that are on women are not really, we don't talk about these things. I mean, we just recently started talking about periods, for the love of body. I mean, that's a subject that was considered, oh, please don't talk about your internal goings on. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about your biological functions like that in public. Mm-hmm. You know, meanwhile, we don't men do feel very free to talk about, you know, the size of their genitals. That's brought up over and over again in popular culture. So it's very interesting to me that we had to be shut out from that conversation for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And India, you don't even talk about that. It's a country where having a period is considered something to be extremely disgusting. You don't talk about it. You don't acknowledge it. And in some within India, in some religions, women are not allowed to enter the kitchen if you've got your period. And in some places, they actually send the women off out of the village into these huts to, you know, ride.
For a week at a time, yeah, to ride it out?
To ride it out. And some of them are in most dangerous conditions. So, yeah, I think it's time that we openly talk about it. And, like, even when I'm doing workshops with girls, in terms of sleep, this is something we talk about very openly. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's like, no, you have to talk about that. You have to talk about the fact that you have cramps right now and you can't focus mm-hmm. on the mathematical equation. Yeah. You know? Because that's not something you talked about. That is not polite conversation.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm tired of being polite. Uh-oh. Let's not be polite, shall we?
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Okay, so how does having a feeling of ownership of your body relate to empowerment for you?
Oh, I think there's a direct correlation. Mm-hmm. Ownership of the body to the feeling of empowerment, mm-hmm. knowing that this is mine to do with as I choose to do with it, who is allowed within that space, how I dress, what I wear. That is, and you brought that up earlier, that these mm-hmm. are all now my choices. Mm-hmm. I choose to do what I want to do because I want to do that, and it's not for anybody. It's for me. And I think that is, for me, a very powerful piece of mm-hmm. Getting to the core of myself. I think that is incredibly empowering. And just knowing what my physical capabilities are, when to be kind to my body and when to push it, those are incredible capacities to get to know. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I think we've had this conversation before, but I'm going to bring it up because this is worth repeating. I think getting to know your physical self, your physical capacities, your physical capabilities is a fantastic way in terms of a road to empowerment and ownership of yourself, because right. this body belongs to you and to nobody else, not to any political ideology, social systems, not to anybody else. It's yours to do with what you choose to do with it. And I think that's how I particularly feel about it. Where are you with it?
Yeah, there's really not much I can add to that. I agree with all that 100%. I think that ownership of your body is everything as it relates to empowerment, because it's just everything that you are put into a nice little package. It's you have to have ownership, I think, of your body in order to feel empowered in any other way. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, again, like I said earlier, how I dress it, who I embrace or I allow to touch me or I touch, and how it's viewed, how I take care of it, how I move it, how I feed it. That's all me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's nothing more empowering than actually realizing that and having that much control over such a big part of your being.
Indeed. And I think mm-hmm. like that's the kind of thing we want to be pushing out and into our society, because I think it's a really powerful message for young humans to have, mm-hmm. female or male or other. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it's really, really, really important to have that message out there mm-hmm. that your body is your own. And as to do with as you please, and nobody and no entity should have a right to your body in any which way or form.
Right.
Christine, this has been a wonderful conversation.
And I agree. That was a really great one.
Thank you. Thank you for collaborating with me on this particular series, because I think it's so wonderful to have somebody who is, you know, fearless in their approach to ideas. I really, truly have such respect and admiration for you, because we're able to have these incredible conversations in such an open way. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for inviting me to do this. It's been wonderful.
Well, this show is yours, my dear. Anytime. I look forward to our next one.
And me as well.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on this episode of Sleep in Society. And I hope to connect with you all soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @RuhiSleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.